So the English translation. Please tell me so that I may be taught in the matter by the instruction of the personality of Godhead, and may thus act instrumentally to generate living entities without being conditioned by such activities. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. Jai, Haribol, yeah. Brahmaji does not want to become a speculator dependent on the strength of his personal knowledge and conditioned to material bondage. Everyone should know in clear consciousness that one is, in the execution of all activities, an instrument. A conditioned soul is instrumental in the hands of the external energy, gunamayi maya, or the illusionary energy of the Lord. And in the liberated stage, the living entity is instrumental to the will of the personality of Godhead directly. To be instrumental to the direct will of the Lord is the natural constitutional position of the living entity, whereas to be an instrument in the hands of the illusionary energy of the Lord is material bondage for the living entity. In that conditioned state, the living entity speculates on the absolute truth and his different activities, but in the unconditioned stage, the living entity directly receives knowledge from the Lord, and such a liberated soul acts flawlessly, without any speculative habit. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verses 10 and 11, confirms emphatically that the pure devotees who are constantly engaged in the loving transcendental service of the Lord are directly advised by the Lord, so much so that the devotee unwaveringly makes progress on the path home back to Godhead. Pure devotees of the Lord are therefore not proud of their definitive progress, whereas the non-devotee speculator is in the darkness of illusionary energy and is very much proud of his misleading knowledge based on speculation without any definite path. Lord Brahma wanted to be saved from that pitfall of pride, although he was posted in the most exalted position in the universe. Lovely purport, isn't it? Om Agyanam Tiriram Dasya Jalangjala Salakaya Taksho Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Titanya Manobistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Spa Padantikam He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Dijakmate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasai Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Chinamine Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Pracharine Nivasesha Shunyavadi Prashachade Satadine Hare Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is centered here, our purport here, which is a very, very lovely purport actually, is centered around Lord Brahma saying, look, I've got a job to do, but you know, stay with me here on this one. The creation of the universe is not a pleasant task, actually. Not a pleasant task, because the universe itself is a place of suffering. And yet Lord Brahma, he had this job. He had this job. It's not always a popular job from the point of view of an unconditioned soul, because you're creating, you're designing a universe to house the conditioned soul. It's like going up to an architect and saying, we're going to commission you at your firm to, you built a few temples, very nice, we want you now to build a prison. And the architect, okay, well, I'm an architect, I'll do that, could do with the work. But a prison? Oh dear, okay. I'll do my duty. So Lord Brahma is in a situation where he's designing, he's the architect of the prison of this universe. So he's saying to the Lord, look, it's a pretty responsible position. It all may go to my head, one of them anyway. And saying, look, help me out here. Of course, we understand that Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha, thank you. Vaikuntha is a place of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. A place with the Nitya Siddhas, most of which actually do not fall down, but there are some. Because Krishna, to love Krishna, it has to be voluntary. For something to be voluntary, it has to be, you have to have the opportunity of making the wrong choice, i.e. not to volunteer. So for those people who do not volunteer, but this is not for the Vaishnav Care Council, but the those who decide they want to serve Krishna in a lesser way, let's say, than the Nitya Siddhas, there's a place for them. It's called the illusionary energy, the Mahatattva. So Lord Vishnu or Karanadakshai Vishnu lies down within the causal ocean of this shadow in the Vaikuntha Loka, this place, this Mahatattva, this place of what is not, illusionary energy, Mahatattva. And as he breathes in and out, the millions of universes breathe in and out the pores of his skin. As he glances on the Pradhan, the potential material energy that is personified as Durga Devi. And that glance contains all the jivas, actually. The glance on the material energy and the personification of Mahavishnu's glance is Lord Shiva. So in each and every universe coming out of the pores of skin of Mahavishnu, there's the half of the universe is filled with the Garbha Dakar Ocean, the womb of creation, Garbha. And on top of that lies Vishnu expands himself again as Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. And from his navel, he's lying down there on the Nantashesh. Lakshmi's there. And then the lotus stem comes out of his navel. And of course, the top is the lotus flower. And as I'm sure most devotees know, the Lord Brahma is therefore born. And there you have it. So he finds himself then having to take darshan of Lord Govinda. And of course, the Brahma Samhita prayers are recited. And then Lord Brahma, however, knows he has this job to do. He has this service. He's got some opportunity to perform some bhakti to the Lord. Look, it's not a nice job, but it's a necessity. Just like building a prison house in a city is a necessity. I've even heard it said that sometimes when they're building new towns, it's probably more common in newer countries, you know, like the United States or whatever, where we're going to build a new town here in the middle of the desert, so we need shops, we need a prison, okay. But that's before there are actually any criminals. Why? Because they know there's going to be criminals. It's human nature, particularly, well, quite literally, the more conditioning there are, the more likely there's going to be prisons. So Vishnu Tattva, of course, you know, Lord Ram is Vishnu Tattva. Of course, Canada, like the Vishnu forms, it's called Vishnu Tattva. Supreme original Vishnu, of course, is Lord Krishna. But Parashuram or Kurumadeva and Nishingadeva, these are all Vishnu Tattva. But non-Vishnu Tattva, no matter how responsible your role is in the universe or even in your house in Watford or wherever it may be, in the ashram, whatever, we're all these miniature controllers. But no matter how much we control, whether we're controlling the universe, whether we're controlling the cosmos, or some part of the universe like Lord Indra being king of heaven, still we are in the position of servants. Still we're in positions of servants. And sometimes the more responsibility we can get, it can quite literally go to our head. In other words, the ego can set in because the ego is the widest, if you like, covering, the thickest covering of this universe. 10 times thicker than intelligence, which is 10 times thicker than the mind, and so on and so forth. So out of all these subtle elements, the ego is the largest. Because it is the ego which is actually bringing us here, ultimately. I.e., thinking that we are the doer and not Krishna. We are ultimately our own little god. There are even people who claim to be God or one with God in some ways. But we would say this is all ultimately aspects of ego, trying to make ourselves God in our mind or in our intentions, the center of attention. I am the greatest. My service is better than anyone else's. My service is more. I've got more power than anyone else. So you imagine that, let's say you've got a CEO, and underneath the CEO you have, I don't know, maybe local managing directors or something like that. Then you have the local managers. Then you've got the people maybe who are doing the, working in the warehouse or whatever. You've got a structure to a large company. And Lord Brahma is pretty high up in that structure of the universe. But still, he's saying, look, I need help with this. This is good, but, you know, ego is a big thing. Please help me to serve with the correct attitude. So if Lord Brahma is doing this, what to speak of ourselves, who are tiny, insignificant living entities in Lord Brahma's, well, Krishna's universe, but design, the architect of which is Lord Brahma. Let us continue. It's interesting, actually, that Prabhupada begins his purport. There's lots of subtle things in this purport. That's why I like it. He starts off, Brahmaji does not want to become a speculator. Brahmaji. He doesn't say Lord Brahma in this context. You notice that? Brahmaji. Jimi is offering respects to somebody, but still Jiva. He's saying he's not the Lord. He's not the Lord. He's a Lord. Lord Brahma is still a Jiva. And also there's an interesting quote from Prabhupada where he actually says that in Lord Brahmas, generally, because they have that passion to create, they're devotees, they're great devotees, but they're not necessarily pure devotees. Lord Brahmas, because to create, it requires a bit of passion, a bit of attachment. You know, even the four Kumaras were aware of that in this universe. They didn't even want to get older. They didn't want to have children or have families or start having the conditions, let's say, some of the natural inclinations that adults have. They thought, we don't want that. We just want to be aloof. So we remain as Kumaras, 5 years old or less. Thank you very much. But although they may look like babies, and we see in the pictures in Prabhupada's books, don't we, some of the beautiful artwork of the four Kumaras, they're sitting there like four babies, toddlers, whatever, I don't know, toddlers. Yet, actually, they were like millions of years old, and extremely wise and powerful. All because they're not fond of the universe, really. You know, have children and bring them up, and then this place is full of disease. I mean, maybe the demigods don't have as much disease as we experience here, but still, a place of suffering, temporary nature. You can become attached to something, and one day, whatever you're attached to is going to be the source of your pain. Because one day you're going to have got to let it go. Think about that. That's it. Whatever you're attached to will become the source of your suffering. And that's a tall order, because we're all attached to things, especially family and perhaps some other things, even our ashram bunker bed or whatever it is, or mat, whatever it is that, you know, or sleeping bag. If we're attached to our sleeping bag, still, one day, it's going to go. So that can become the source of our pain. But the four Kumaras are saying, no. We're just going to stay as tiny little toddlers, and that's enough for us. But yet Lord Brahma actually had to kind of like force some of the exalted yogis, go forth and multiply, you know, get on with it. And there was actually some reluctance from the more saintly yogis in the beginning of the universe, because they could see, they had the intelligence to see what it was all about. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Not in the Kumara's case, no old age at least. So what I wanted to do was to... I kind of did this last time I gave class, so I'm cheating a bit here, but I just wanted to read a little bit from the Brahma Samhita, because it gives an idea of the first prayer of this universe, the oldest prayer in the universe. But also it tells us about, of course, Govinda, and it also tells us about Lord Brahma's relationship with the Lord as well, and it tells us a little bit about Lord Brahma himself and his mood, his attitude, which of course is a very devotional one. Like I said, that Lord Brahma's may not necessarily be all pure devotees, but they're very good devotees. Well, our Brahma is. The Brahma Samhita chapter 5, I'll just read, select a few from text 33 to about whatever, maybe on to about 40 or something. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is inaccessible to the Vedas, but obtainable by pure, unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second, who is not subject to decay, is without a beginning, whose form is endless, who is the beginning and the eternal Purush. Yet he is a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth. It's beautiful, beautiful poetic language. I'm sure I think you all agree. And this is very important, because when I read this verse, I thought to myself, this is not resembling anything we find in the material world. He's, you know, eternal blooming with youth. Okay, the four Kumaras or whatever, but you know, most of us. He's not subject to decay. Again, decay, very much an aspect of this material world and this universe. Pure, unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second. So what Lord Brahma here is saying, I'm king of the universe, if you like, or whatever I am, I'm the creator of the universe, but I'm not at the top. Like I mentioned before, you know, he's coming from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who himself is coming from Karandadakshay Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and he himself, of course, is coming from Narayan forms, and the most personal form, of course, is Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. Text 34. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after transcendental and betake themselves to pranayam by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanas who try to find out about non-differentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane, extending over thousands of millions of years. So here, Brahma is referring to different yogic processes, pranayam, very good for you, by the pranayam, or by jnanis who try to find it through study and through learning, or those who kind of ultimately reach an impersonal realization. Their process, of course, is much slower than the personal path, the loving, the bhakti, which we teach, of course, in ISKCON. 35. He is an undifferentiated entity, and there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe. And one at the same time, such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. So Lord Brahma here is under no illusion about the supreme nature, the omnipresent nature of the Supreme Lord. Of course, Shivadakshay Vishnu is, of course, another expansion of Vishnu, if you like, who resides as a supersoul in everybody's heart, in fact, in every atom. And that is something which is very difficult to comprehend, frankly. But this real sense of omnipresence of the Lord is something which Lord Brahma is completely aware of. Let's read a couple more because I like these verses. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose glory ever triumphantly dominates the mundane world by the activity of his own pastimes, being reflected in the mind of recollecting souls as a transcendental entity of ever-blissful cognitive ras. Lowest of all is located Devidham, the mundane world. Next above it is Maheshdham, abode of Mahesh, Lord Shiva. Above Maheshdham is placed Haridham, the abode of Hari. And above them all is located Krishna's own realm named Goloka, Goloka Vrindavan, of course. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allotted their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. Actually, you find in the fifth canto, of course, is described as 14 different planetary systems, meaning there's 14 different levels, if you like. But even above the level of Lord Brahma, at the top of this particular Brahmandala universe, of course, you know, Devidham, Maheshdham, which is Lord Shiva's abode, and then, of course, Vaikuntha, and the very top is, as mentioned before, Goloka Vrindavan. So you have this kind of sense of gradation in the Puranic universe, in the Puranic cosmology. The idea that if the higher you go, they can see you, but you can't see them. Just like we can look at a lower entity like some bacteria or some insect. We can study them and look at them, but they can't probably figure us out. Similarly, the demigods, they're looking down on us, but Lord Brahma's looking down on the demigods because he's their original father. But the original father of all fathers, of course, is the Lord himself, who's looking down on the entire universe is aloof, actually, and does not suffer like the living entities suffer in this world. And Lord Brahma, as I mentioned, has got a difficult job to do. He has to get his hands dirty, actually. Whereas Krishna, he's enjoying his pastimes. Let's just do two other verses here. The external potency of Maya, who is of the nature of the shadow of the chit potency, is worshipped by all people as Durga, the creating, preserving, and destroying agency of this mundane world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda in accordance with whose will Durga conducts herself. In other words, all the demigods, Durga, whoever, are great devotees. But Durga is the, she's the mystery, I'm trying to think of the call, the in charge of the prison house. Just like I was saying, how you design a city, then you've got like the head prison warden, if you like, of the prison. So that's the role. She's Mother Nature. But Mother Nature is divine, yes, and she's a devotee of the Lord. But nature can also be cruel as well. Nature can be cruel. We know that. The light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. So I think that's lovely. So what I wanted to do, having shared the Brahma Samhita, to capture, if you like, some of the mood of Lord Brahma, I thought, and to understand his position relative to that of Lord Krishna's or Govinda. But I wanted to move back now onto Prabhupada's purport, such a lovely purport it is. There's some interesting words that Prabhupada uses. The word instrumental, I think I counted two or three times in his purport, actually. And the other word he uses quite a lot is speculates. He uses these words feature quite prominently here. So let's look at those words. Let's try to dissect what instrumental. So I got my Oxford English Dictionary out, actually, I did it online. I didn't get it out. It was there. And instrumental is defined as serving as a means or pursuing an aim or policy. It can also be relating to the use of a tool or instrument played, i.e., you imagine that Krishna is the conductor, if you like, of the orchestra, and we're playing an instrument, or we are one of those instruments. But if the violins or one of the instruments goes out of tune, it's not tuned properly, or suddenly you're no longer reading from the right the same score, you're on a different page to the rest of the orchestra, and you start going, and you start making, you go out of discord. Krishna is going to say, okay, can you leave the orchestra, please? You're making this sound awful. In other words, sort yourself out, learn to play the violin or whatever it is, get your instrumental mood together, and come back. So we're all musicians or instruments in Krishna's orchestra, and we all have to play to his tune, as it were. An orchestra works as a team, just like ISKCON works as a team. We all have our part to play. The bass, the double bass, or the cello, the string instruments, or the more kind of the much more trebler instruments, like the violins, for example. But it's not that one instrument dominates the whole orchestra. I mean, you can't have just the drums. It'd be pretty boring, actually. You know, there's many instruments. So similarly, there were many departments, different ways of serving Krishna, if you like, different departments. Those who prefer one type of service, those who are more inclined towards another. And that's okay. It's all part of the composition, quite literally, actually. Krishna's. So we need to play by his way. And this is an enjoyable thing. When we're in Krishna's orchestra as instruments, the sound is beautiful. Of course, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. But this sound is from the spiritual world, and it's a joy to be part of. So being an instrument of Krishna doesn't mean being a servant doesn't sometimes, in some circles, it can conjure images of slave or some, you know, servant, a slave, a maid, you know, someone, you know, or if somebody of a, who earns the lord of a land, or your servant, can you please tidy this up? Can you cook for me? And but the thing is, though, although one is a servant, it's a loving servant. It's different, or an instrument, as Prabhupada says here, and it's enjoyable. So it's not the word, you know. I mean, it is not that type of servant. It is a voluntary, loving, devotional service. In other words, when you love someone, you instantly, automatically want to serve them. And again, like I said in the beginning, it is voluntary. A slave, for example, is not a volunteer. A servant, a voluntary servant, is a lover. Or someone who has some type of attachment or motive to serve his or her superior. Another word which I mentioned, which is quite prominent, is speculate. And what's interesting here, I thought, I mean, obviously we know that word speculate means to have a theory or come to a conclusion without the proper backing, or you know, lacking a path, as Prabhupada actually says in his purport, or in our case, lacking a bona fide sampradaya, or one is on one's own. It might be this, I'll take a bit from there, a bit from there, this is okay, yeah, okay, I'll forge my own path, thank you. Confirmation. But basically Prabhupada is saying this is not going to be the nature. Of Lord Brahma, of course, he was taking darshan of Lord Govinda, hence the Brahma Samhita prayers, and hence the impetus to create, the creative impetus. So he was under no illusion. He was not a speculator, actually. If Lord Krishna came in this room, that would be it. You know, he wouldn't need to speculate anymore. He's there. For us, however, it does require faith and perseverance, accepting the authority, for example, of the disipsic succession and so forth, the parampara, and understand that on our own, we, look, for example, like armchair speculators, I think is a good, you know, you imagine, don't you, the people in a smoking room with their pipe and the fire and the copy of the Times newspaper, and they go, "Ah, what do you think?" "Oh, I think that yes, well, I think you look into the sky and you decide what it is. Oh, I'm influenced by this person, or sometimes they won't even accept anybody apart from themselves. But how can this be done? How can we really know what's going on beyond the coverings of this universe, as being this insignificant entity in this on this armchair, as it were? Especially if they're not following the principles or following any kind of process or accepting any kind of authority. Sometimes it's even been said that if someone is passive, if someone is respectful to an authority in disipsic succession, but they're finding that they're struggling with the regulatory principles, let's say they have a habit they just can't give up, but they have great respect for, let's say, a particular senior devotee or something like that, who's giving them the absolute truth, and they say, "Maharaj, Swamiji, I'm not on that level, but I know you're telling the truth, and I'm on the path." That's actually a superior position, actually, to someone who finds it easy to follow the, you know, the physical regulatory principles, but does not want to follow any type of authority, or does not accept any authority. Because sooner or later, their conclusion will be impersonal of some type, or will not take them to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So, of course, another way, as we've been talking a bit about the universe this morning, haven't we? So another category that Prabhupada actually talks about is speculators, sometimes is atheistic scientists as well, can... Not all scientists are atheists, but those who perhaps propagate an atheistic agenda are also on the speculative level. Because when one is on the speculative path, one is on the armchair looking up, trying to figure it all out. Whereas when one is in the bona fide sampradaya, listening for the truth in that way, for the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, one is hearing it from the top down. Hearing it from higher authorities, from those who've seen the truth. So just in conclusion, in the past 5 minutes or so, Prabhupada mentions two verses in the Bhagavad Gita. That's chapter 10 and 10 and verses 10 and 11. So what we'll do is, just towards the end of this class, we'll maybe just read a little bit, have a look at those verses that Prabhupada is referring to. Let's see if I can find them on my list here, of course. Yeah, 10. Oh, here we go. Bhagavad Gita 10 and 10, 11. So, Tisham sasata yuktanam bhajacham pitipurvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Prabhupada says, when one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called buddhi yoga. In other words, buddhi is a process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he's acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he's acting in jnana yoga. In other words, what Prabhupada is saying here is that jnana is a form of yoga. It is a form of linking with higher things. But study alone isn't going to get you to the lotus feet of Krishna. It's by bhakti, by devotion. So it's like a yoga ladder, as it's described. There are some processes of yoga which basically bring you closer to Krishna than others. Thus you have different rungs of the ladder pictured vertically. A person who may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he's still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. So again, backing up what I said, someone may lack certain qualities, may lack natural intelligence, may not even be able to read, for example. But if one is sincere, then Krishna helps. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. We cannot make it on our own, actually. We're not I'm certainly speaking for myself, I'm not qualified. I need help from the devotees. I need help from everybody. I just need help. Need help from the Lord, of course. And if as soon as we start thinking we can do it all alone, we can become puffed up. We have to know where we are. If I want to get to, let's say I want to go to Garuda Bhavan in Scotland, the temple in Scotland. Some of you may have been there. In Les Mahago, actually. So, but if I don't have a map, if I've got a map of London and I don't have a map of the rest of the country, I may be entangled in London, which probably is quite realistic at rush hour time, because I haven't got the full picture. So I need to understand my destination. I could be driving a very beautiful Bentley on the streets of, say, London, in this analogy, round and round and round the North Circular or whatever, and never really get anywhere. I can have an old Robin Reliant, a freewheeler. And as long as I know, you go on the M1, you carry on, you go up to the other road, and you know the route, even if your instrument is a very old, battered violin, if you're playing the tune, you will get to your destination. So even if your car, as long as it's got enough petrol and devotion, and you're chanting, and sadhana is there, that's the fuel, you'll reach your destination. So that's the analogy I'd like to use there. Quickly on Bhagavad Gita 10:11. Desamurbano kampatam mahamagyane chamtamaha nashayatmi atma bhavasto gyana dipema bashvata. Krishna says, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Prabhupada writes in the purport, there's no possibility of understanding the supreme truth, the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, simply by speculating. So we're back to speculation again here. For the supreme truth is so great that it's not possible to understand him or to achieve him simply by making a mental effort. Clue there. In other words, no matter how smart we are, no matter how much we use our brains, we're still limited. From the point of view of Krishna, the mental capacity of Einstein compared with, let's say, a three-year-old toddler is still very, very small. We're still within the limited human species. And we can be, if we're compared with the demigods and certainly Lord Brahma, how smart are they? How powerful is the subtle body of Lord Brahma, most of which consists of pure intelligence? So we cannot do it just simply by our mental effort. Man can go on speculating for millions of years, Prabhupada adds. And if he is not devoted, if he is not a lover of the supreme truth, he will never understand Krishna. Only by devotional service, by his inconceivable energy, can he reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart. And with the presence of Krishna, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. Finally, Prabhupada writes, to the contamination of material association, due to contamination of material association, through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and one is elevated to the platform, gradually elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. So finally, just a few concluding words. Qualification for being in this orchestra. First of all, we have to have faith, as it says in Gita 9:22, that Krishna says, I will carry what people have carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So sincerity, humility, and tolerance are the greatest instruments, actually the greatest tools for us to use in this great orchestra of the Lord. If we don't have humility, if we don't have tolerance, if we don't have perseverance, if we don't have sincerity, and above all, if we don't have any love, then this is basically illusionary energy is bound to catch up with us. But with these as pillars, as principles of our devotional lives, we will slowly, perhaps, but certainly, we will be in the right direction on our journey. So it's 8:30. I'll finish there. Perhaps anyone has anything to add, even one or two questions. Not that I will be able to answer them, but we'll do Prajna Prabhu, then we'll do Taruna Prabhu. Hare Krishna Prabhu. And if anyone has the microphone, please pass it henceforward.
There's three little quotes I would like to see. As one St. Francis of Assisi, his prayer, he said, make me an instrument of thy peace. And then it says, there's another quote, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, I became supremely happy, knowing I no longer belong to myself.
Wow.
Yeah, these are very powerful quotes.
These are powerful quotes, which very much are in line with what we've been talking about, so thank you for sharing them. It's the idea of let go of oneself and let God. Let God decide for you, which is another meditation which springs to mind. Taruna Prabhu, and then if anyone else before we finish. Plus one or two.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
To ground down a little bit to this level. This last quotation from Bhagavad Gita. If somebody, I don't know, due to lack of faith or whatever reason is not taking guidance from the guru, and Krishna says, I'll instruct you, but itself not being able to take instruction from guru or guidance is already disqualification to be guided by anyone. So can be many reasons, even if he's sincere. So how is that done? How Krishna instructs, how he bridges over the guru, because he said only by mercy of Krishna one can know absolute truth. But if he doesn't take instruction of guru, then that means he was already disqualified from being guided. So how Krishna arranges that?
Right, so you're talking about if someone goes to an unqualified guru?
Even if he's guru qualified, Prabhupada mentioned that even if the guru is qualified, bona fide, but on somehow doesn't take advantage of that. So that means it's some problem there.
Yeah.
So how does Krishna interfere and bridges over kind of
I mean, basically, the answer to that is one must try one's best to take advantage of a qualified guru. You know, there's once when I think it was Prabhupada was sitting with his disciples, and he was, you know, telling them to preach and so forth. And one of them said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I don't want to go out and preach. I just want to stay at your side." And Prabhupada's response was, "There's a mosquito here on my knee." It was probably in India. He said, "But is that mosquito serving me? Or is it taking my blood?" In other words, it's not about being fit. It's about serving the orders of the spiritual master. So one can even have, if someone can cause offence, or if someone disobeys the orders of the pure devotee spiritual master, then where is the benefit there? One just becomes like a mosquito. So similarly, I mean, if one is sincere, one will ultimately find a bona fide spiritual master. And in ISKCON, of course, Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya. He is the main Shiksha Guru for everyone in ISKCON, and that will remain so. And everybody else is, of course, a transparent via medium to Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON like that. So that in that way, our structure is very effective. We already have our pure devotee.
Wondering how Krishna is viewing that situation. Let's say you kind of step out of the realm of grasp of your guru, and then let's say you go to Prabhupada, but then is that broken link? Or, you know, like, I have to admit, I have pretty much this situation. So you go to Prabhupada, then somebody may say, okay, I go to Bhaktisiddhanta, eventually I go to Krishna. It's kind of very difficult position.
At the end of the day, there are thousands of paths. There's hundreds of different religious paths. So one has to basically, if one is sincere, they just have to ultimately find a bona fide path. There's four bona fide sampradayas, for example. You know, there's a Rudra sampradaya, there's the, you know, Brahma sampradaya, of which we're part, the Lakshmi sampradaya. So I think the idea really is, you have your path, you follow it sincerely, and Krishna will help. That's all I can say, really. And any final points, perhaps? And then we'll finish.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a nice class. You started off, Prabhupada actually writes, addressing Lord Brahma as Brahmaji, as you said in your nice class. And yesterday's class also, to Krishna Prabhu, as he was reading the purport, and I was reflecting on this, he says, time and by different agents like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and Lord Shiva destroys. So in that instance, he addresses Lord Shiva as Lord Shiva, but Vishnu and Brahma are not addressed as Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma, accordingly. And similarly, in today's verse, you mentioned about Brahmaji as being addressed as a Jiva Tattva. So I just wanted to get that clarity as to, obviously, Prabhupada, in one instance, he addresses Lord Shiva
is Shiva Tattva, actually. Yeah. And is actually superior. Shiva is actually, as I understand it, superior to Lord Brahma. But Lord Shiva is the glance of Mahavishnu upon the potential material energy. And that is a senior role, as it were, to Lord Brahma, who is limited to creating one universe. But there are millions of universes which are emanating, of course, from the pores of Mahavishnu. And that same Mahavishnu's glance is personified as Lord Shiva. So, in that sense. But sometimes Prabhupada does call Brahma Lord Brahma, and sometimes he calls him Brahmaji.
It says Vishnu maintains, so it doesn't say Lord Vishnu maintains like that. But okay, it's just a...
Yeah, I mean Vishnu is actually said to be the main of the Trimurti, yeah. The main... Because he's in charge of the mode of goodness, you know. Should we just do one final point, and then we'll finish? Unless someone's itching to add something.
Yeah, it's just the point about Lord Shiva. So the glance of onto the material energy, impregnating material nature, living entities is Sadashiva. But then you have also later on, when Lord Brahma appears in the universe, then. You know, when he gets, I forget how, but anyway, Brahma gets angry, and then from his...
comes the Rudras, yeah.
From his
form of Lord Shiva, yeah.
Forehead comes the Rudras.
Yeah.
So are the Rudras Are they to do with jivas or?
Rudras are Shiva Tattva. From my understanding, they are Shiva Tattva, but their potency is to destroy the universe. And they appear through the four-headed Lord Brahma. But it doesn't mean that Lord Shiva himself is not created at that point. They are expansions of Lord Shiva. Right. And remember, Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction of the universe. He does his cosmic dance in the form of Nataraj, for example. And yet when it comes to burning the universe, you have the Rudras. But they appear in the universe via Lord Brahma's forehead. But they are not. You can't. That's not when the main Lord Shiva appears, as it were. This different explanation. I think we'll finish there, unless there's something else. No. Okay. Thank you for tolerating me this morning. Thank you, Bhujis. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.